Today's program is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit rt11.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Inside School Food. I'm Laura Stanley, and today we're back with more shop talk about progressive strategies for success. And as promised, today's topic is food courts at school, which is an increasingly popular way to jazz up reimbursable meals for trend savvy teenagers. If you're flirting with the idea for any of your sites, you're going to want to give a close listen to today's guests. We have with us two experts on school food courts. They're equally prepared to either talk you into or out of the immense investment involved in embracing this style of food service, because it doesn't just involve money, but also, and I'd say more significantly, it involves a commitment to sea change in the entire school community's attitude towards lunch. We're going to start off with Paul Mackesy, who is principal and senior consultant at Food Service Management Solutions, which is a company that offers a suite of consulting services for K-12 food service clients. Paul has been consulting to the food service trade for 26 years, and that consultancy has included many hundreds of school districts over the years. After station break, we'll visit with Kelly Friend, who is with Whitson's Culinary Group, which is a major provider of food service to schools throughout the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic. Whitson's has been quite successful with its food courts, so Kelly will have lots of takeaways for you. So, Paul, it is so great to finally get you on the show. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura. How are you?
I'm good. I think we just, for starters, we need to establish a little bit more about your company. There's Food Management Solutions, and then you separately consult under Mackesy and Associates. Can you tell me, you know, what it is you do?
Yeah, actually, in both of our companies, we provide, as you said, a suite of consulting services. As independent food service consultants, we directly contract with school districts or with people representing school districts, whether it be architects or construction managers. We're not involved at all in the sale of any food service equipment, so our view is purely independent and in the best interest of the school district. We do food service facility design. We also do food service operational consulting to support any of the aspects of operating a cost-effective and a customer-based food service operation. Mm-hmm. Over half of our business is supporting K-12 schools, so that's where I started in the industry, and I have a very, very, very strong passion for this part of the market segment.
I know. That's why you're here. When I look at your website, I see that you are mostly present in the Midwest, but you really are doing work all over the country. I see clients in California and Florida. So, and where are you today? You're always on the road, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm actually in the center part of Wisconsin right now.
Okay.
heading to a meeting.
Okay. So I know that your work has come to include consulting districts about food courts, and that you've been involved with many food court installations over the years. I mean, how many would you say that you've been involved with so far?
At the risk of somewhat dating myself with the number that we've done, I'm sure it's over two dozen. It may be in the neighborhood of over three dozen, actually. And I will also tell you that those are kind of full-on food courts, and there's always been these kind of hybrids that might have brought some of the concepts of the marketing pieces that you can do in a food court into something that might be a project that doesn't have as much space or as much budget to be able to fully embrace that concept.
Yeah, and that's something I really do want to get into today. There's the food court, and then there's the kind of food court state of mind. So we'll talk about both. But let's just look at the full-blown food court. You know, can you describe a typical example of a food court you've worked on? You know, you step in the room, and what do you see?
Well, the big difference between going to a food court style of service versus kind of a more traditional straight line or cafeteria line service that is so traditional in the K-12, whether it be in elementary, middle, or high school, primarily all of the food courts that we've done are in the somewhere in the 9 to 12 grade level. And in that, you walk in and you do not really have a defined method of circulation. It's very free-flowing, and oftentimes it can be, some people talk about the marketplace style of a servery design, and that's really part of kind of what the food court is, and it's based on a station concept. And so mm-hmm. each of the different menu offerings are centered within a food station. So you're... student would be able to go up and if it would end up being a pizza station or a comfort food station or a deli station or maybe some ethnic food choices. All of those items really kind of are standalone, and you're able to circulate and pick up those menu items. And then you're also able to as you're finishing up the transaction, pick up maybe some additional items. Maybe it might end up being a beverage choice or mm-hmm. some other accompaniment to that meal, and then you head to a cashier, and also that cashier is not coupled with any of these service concepts. So for that student that's looking to really only maybe not fully participate in a full reimbursable meal, but they're looking to maybe just get a juice or a milk or something to mm-hmm. maybe accompany something that they might have brought from home, they're able to do that very quickly and not have to wait in line. One of the benefits of this circulation.
Right. And, you know, I'm sorry, it just sounds like you're treating the students like grown-ups. They're, you know, making choices. They're making choices from different stations. And I understand these stations are typically, you know, look like they would in a shopping mall or an airport food court. They're branded and they're nicely designed, right?
Well, some of them can be branded, absolutely. And what it does is it kind of brings a retail feel into school food. And mm-hmm. part of that is just in the makeup of how, again, you're circulating through the space. But it also allows you to put some additional decor to each one of these stations. And maybe whether it would need be a nationally branded concept or maybe it's a district branded concept mm-hmm. An ethnic food station or a pizza station or comfort food. It really allows for you to kind of take yourself a little bit out of the traditional mold of school food and let there be a little bit of that retail feel. And then that really allows you to close that gap, because what we find is so many of the students are driven by their retail experience, and that's what they bring along with them to this mm-hmm. to school food, and that's where their expectations are set.
Yeah.
So as we can close that gap, that's when we start to see some of the success.
And what's so neat is that these stations are pushing reimbursable meals. So it looks jazzed up, it looks grown up, it has a sophisticated retail feel, but the meal for sale, I mean, you mentioned that a la carte's available, but it's reimbursable meals.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what they do is that they're able to pick up those components through either menuing or other signage kind of things that it educates the student, and after probably only two or three days, they're very, very conscious of what it takes to make that reimbursable meal, but they're able to pick up the pizza and the salad or some other kind of maybe some entree and a hot vegetable and some other components. And then to qualify for that reimbursable meal, along with the beverage, and then go to the cashier. So this isn't marketing an a la carte concept at all. It's mm-hmm. really marketing choices, and those choices can very, very easily support a reimbursable.
Yeah, I think it's important to emphasize that. So, you know, when you're working with a district that's thinking about this, what is their typical motivation for wanting to embrace this concept?
Well, I can't tell you that there's really one motivation, but I'll tell you some of the things that have driven some people to make this embracing this change and also in investing in the capital needs that would support this. One of the pieces are that there might be a high school district that has gone from an open to a closed campus, and they know that they need to be able to offer some more capacity potentially in that service concept, and they also need to increase some of the offerings. And one of the reasons that they do that is when they start looking at a better investment in just a bigger footprint, mm-hmm. more options, and then to speed up speed service.
Yeah, that's important, speeding up service. And what about participation? That's a huge pressure on districts, especially those that are lower than 50% free or reduced. Does this tend to be a motivation for these districts?
Absolutely. A well-implemented food court program, we've never had it not be successful in raising participation.
Wow.
When you make an investment like this, I think you have to put all of the resources, both from the personnel standpoint and also from the facility standpoint, to be able to see some real benefit back to the students. And the best way to judge that success is how many people show up and how many people use it.
Right.
So an increase in participation is really the best mm-hmm. judge.
But this is not for every district. So, you know, describe the ideal candidate. You know, when are you most confident that your client will succeed at doing this?
Well, I don't know that there's a magic number of students in the building or any kind of a size kind of threshold. I don't believe that there's anything in regard to economic or urban versus rural or mm-hmm. anything like that. I really believe it's having the ability to implement the program correctly. And so if you're going to go down this path, I think, especially if you have a very traditional service concept, you have to be willing to be ready to embrace the change that's going to come along with that. You're going to have to prepare foods somewhat differently. You're going to have to be able to, part of that food court concept really is bringing some of the preparation of that food out so that it's visible to the students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second piece is really that you have to really look at the ability to kick up your merchandising and really make this retail concept feel like retail and not just a school food service version of retail.
Right. So you basically need food service leadership that's kind of ambitious and committed to marketing and that constant innovation that makes for success in a regular retail environment. You also spoke to me about the importance of both, you know, administrative and school board support. You know, you need a principal who really gets what this can do for the school as a whole. And another thing you said that I thought was funny was, you know, if the principal sees the cafeteria as a trough, don't do it. Can you speak to that?
Well, exactly. And I think that's really true even outside of anything having to do with food courts. The support of the building administration for a food service program is tremendously important. Anything that can be done to support the good structure within the school building is where food service operates, I think, is really going to benefit any concept that is being presented. But secondly, when you go through this whole change piece, when you can have the principal and really all the people within the building, whether it be from the administration to the teachers, custodians, everybody that's being able to support this change, then you have a very good implementation. When they don't really understand the reasons for it, then there's a real risk of a good implementation.
Yeah, yeah. So in other words, if you don't have that support, you might want to wait. And when we get Kelly on in the second half, I'm going to ask her about ways, you know, sort of baby steps towards winning that support and demonstrating that this could be a successful model, because at the outset, it's not always there. You told me that you have visited food courts that are less than 10 years old that aren't functioning well anymore. And, you know, and so what are the reasons, you know, that a food court can go wrong?
Well, some of it has to do with just the ability to really continue to change and to keep it fresh. A good design in a food court would allow for there to be some changes of some of the equipment. And in doing that, you'd be able to refresh the concepts and you'd be able to kind of bring in new concepts or change them out. So as things get stale, that you can maybe put them on a shelf for a little bit and then mm-hmm. come back with them. I think that one of the things that a food court does is allows you to be flexible if it's designed and implemented correctly. And that's one of the things I think that has to be paramount in the planning.
Right. And you know, so there, maybe just give us a couple of examples of a kind of major equipment purchase that is, you know, kind of overspecified so that it can be flexible over time. You know, what are some of the things that people need or a district would need to buy to make a station work?
One of the things that is almost included in all of our food courts is some kind of a conveyor air impingement oven that traditionally is used for pizza, but it can also be used for things like calzones and some other ethnic choices. It can be used for kind of a hot sub concept, and you can merchandise those in very similar ways. So you could even change that out during the week. Maybe Monday, Wednesday, and Friday you could have one menu set, and then Tuesday, Thursday you could have another menu set using the exact same pieces of equipment. Another one is doing some build-your-own concepts, whether it be build your own salad, build your own deli station. Again, very, very similar equipment, but just changing out those menu concepts.
Right. So someone, you know, a company like yours can kind of advise on what are the kind of items that give you that flexibility so that you can innovate over time. Paul, I'm assuming this is very expensive. You know, so for, let's just say, I'll throw it out there, for a food court that has something like, I don't know, 9 stations, is that a lot? Or, you know, what's a typical size and what kind of investment are we talking about for typical size?
Well,
I guess 9's a lot, right?
Yes. I mean, okay, food service equipment is very, very expensive, and that's why the planning has to be done very meticulously. And in doing that, typically a food court's got at least 5 stations.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, we have them on larger campuses, schools that approach almost 3,000 students, so we will get up to 8-9 stations.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I want to caution everybody about, it's great to get the food served, but you have to be able to also have a cashiering capability that's at least 100% of the speed of service.
Mm-hmm.
Because while students do not like to wait, when they're being served, they really don't like to wait when they're waiting to be cashiered. And then there's also that opportunity, unfortunately, that there can be some shrinkage in regard to, you know, the food that's maybe even consumed within the food court itself before they actually hit the point of sale.
Right.
So you want to be able to make sure that they can very quickly circulate to that point of sale and that they can get to the table.
So upwards, is it, you know, more than $1 million for something that's 5 stations approximately? And, you know, I imagine it varies depending on the model, but just to give a sense of what it might cost.
Well, yes. I mean, and I think that you can talk about that in 2 different categories. Mm-hmm. That kind of the first silo would be the actual food service equipment, and it's very easy to spend over $500,000 on that equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it, we've done servery renovations where the back of the house really hasn't had to be touched, and we've been able to just modernize or expand the servery area, and that helps to keep the equipment investment down to a more reasonable level.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, very easy to spend $500,000 on this. It's also then, when you look at that $500,000, you know that you probably have an equal amount in the infrastructure, whether it be ventilation or changes to plumbing and electrical, the whole interior upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a construction piece of floors and walls and ceilings. So
yeah.
It is a considerable investment. And that's
right.
Why oftentimes we end up doing these new constructions.
Yeah,
but we've done a number of them in a remodeled scenario as well.
Right, right. So it does take a district that has the funding available or can make it available. But you know, we can take heart whenever the concept takes off, because you know, in every setting where these food courts are successful, when the word gets out, it challenges tired ideas so many people have about school food. So. I'm excited, and I understand that the demand is going up. You're hearing more and more questions about it and more requests for these kind of designs, right?
Well, I think that's true, and one of the things is because traditionally, I think people within schools are a little bit more conservative than maybe some of the other markets,
mm-hmm.
and they like to be able to reference some other successes. They pioneering some of these concepts is not for the faint of heart, and for that reason, you need to recognize that, and you need to have that person that's willing to kind of be a little bit of a pioneer. But they can be a pioneer knowing that there's been many people that have had successes, and they can mm-hmm. talk to those people, and they can do lessons learned and they can have they can get some mentoring going on. That's one of the things.
Yeah.
That's one of the great things about school food services. People share very, very well.
I know. We say that all the time on the show, and that's why I love it. Paul, this has been really interesting, and thank you so much for joining us today to talk about it. I've put links to both Food Service Management Solutions and your other company, Macasey and Associates, on today's show page on InsideSchoolFood.com for listeners who want to learn more about your work. And just for fun, I also posted a link to a really nice news article about a high school food court in Lantana, Florida. It's not one that you worked on, but what I like is that it really illustrates what we've been talking about. This district was, you know, relatively low food reduced, but as you said, they've seen participation go up since they installed their food court. So take a look at that. We've been speaking with Paul Macasey, who is a veteran consultant to the food service industry, about one of the hottest trends in school food, the high school food court. More on this topic after station break with learnings from the stylish food courts run by Whitson's Culinary Group.
The program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
Welcome back. On the line with us now is Kelly Friend of Whitson's Culinary Group, where she serves as Chief Operating Officer of Contact Management. Kelly has led the creation of a vibrant signature style for school dining that promotes healthy eating. The tagline for their campaign is, "What's your foodatude?" I love that. In Whitson's food courts, good design is making a pretty big splash, as you're about to hear. But Kelly is also going to tell you how you can work that same marketing magic into smaller, and sometimes even much smaller and more modest settings. Hi there, Kelly.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Very good. Why don't we just, you know, for folks who are not on the East Coast, I think they might need to know a little bit about Whitson's. Tell us about your company.
Sure. Whitson's has been in business for over 30 years now, and we manage about $175 million in sales. That's between contract management, meaning K-12, our prepared meals division, where we deliver meals to homes and direct sites for prisons and hospitals and for places that can't prepare meals on site, as well as corporate dining. Mm-hmm. But K-12 is really our big market right now, and we serve about 400,000 meals a day.
Well, and I was actually surprised to learn that you are the fourth largest food service management company serving K-12. Is that right?
We are the best kept secret.
You are. And I, as I said, I think people who are not on the East Coast are going to be like, really? Okay.
Yes, we're still privately held. We were a mid-sized firm for a long time, and we are really approaching that mega market status
in the last few years. Okay. So you have a lot of resources, which we're going to talk about, but I also just love talking to you about this stuff because you have so much wisdom for smaller districts and self-ops. So we'll talk about both. But let's start out with just looking at your food courts. How many food courts or however you want to quantify it, what percentage of your high schools have them right now?
Right now, more than 40% of our high schools have true food courts where they're broken out concept stations that self-stand on their own, with the remaining being modified versions of food court environments.
Okay. And when did you start doing food courts?
We started about 15 years ago and really began in our corporate dining division, mm-hmm. where the need to have variety, of course, was very high because customers had a chance of eating on the outside. The retail competition was so fierce. And then we soon quickly realized, gee, you know what? A lot of the new millennials that were coming into our businesses had just graduated high school or mm-hmm. college, and they were used to this environment. Why not bring it right down to the high school and middle school level?
Once again, as I said in the first half, treating them like grown-ups. It's good business.
That's right.
So we asked Paul to kind of walk us through a food court. Can you walk us through a Whitson's food court? What do you see?
Yeah. So our traditional food court environments start with a minimum of four food court environments, and the average has about 7 to 8. So on a typical 4 or 5 food court environment operation, we would always have the most popular, what we call our core environment concepts, our fooditude, and that is our La Cucina Italian Eatery, mm-hmm. which is a gourmet pizza. It's a calzone, a stuffed bread, and even can include a hot entree that's Italian style, like a Parmesan chicken or meatball heroes. And each concept in the La Cucina environment would include maybe 4 or 5 different varieties of a pizza, maybe 4 or 5 different varieties of a calzone. So it's not just about the actual court itself, it's about the opportunity inside that court to mm-hmm. expand on your menu variety.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the other brands? Because you've got some really fun names for some of these.
Yeah. Great American Deli is another very popular, especially on this coast where New York delis are, you know, among the most populated retail environments that are offered. Mm-hmm. So Great American Deli would have a variety of 10 or 12 different cold cuts and cheeses. That would include some purchased items, you know, like a turkey or a ham. It would also include some homemade items where we flavor the turkeys and the chickens with sriracha and Cajun spices and honey mustard so that we can really expand on the opportunity to serve many, many different varieties, but keeping the inventory at a manageable level mm-hmm. with just ingredient bases.
Right, right.
And that we have 10 or 12 different toppings and spreads. Again, many of the spreads are made using just core ingredients, using the mustards, using the mayos, using the ketchups, and then, again, flavoring them with really, you know, exotic peppers or dried spices or other, you know, really interesting flavored dressings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you've got a Coyote Grill. I know that
Grill, again, you know, one of the most popular stations we have is a Coyote Grill, which is a Tex-Mex style.
Oh, of course that's popular.
And it doesn't matter what the demographic is. It doesn't matter the geography.
Yeah.
Kids love tacos. They love burritos. They love to be able to create their own. And I think that's really what started the popular experimenting in Coyote Grill, and it's just expanded, is kids really are in control. You know, give me a little bit of that. I'll have some fajita chicken. Oh, and you know what? I want 2 kinds of cheeses. I'll have a pepper jack and a shredded cheddar.
Right. So they're getting made to order for them. Yeah, yeah.
They're in control, and I think that always makes a difference.
Yes.
When you're trying to please students.
Yes, yes. And I just want to emphasize again that what we're talking about is reimbursable meals.
Everything we serve is a reimbursable meal, mm-hmm. and that's always the goal. So not only do all of these meals have to fulfill the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act criteria, but it, you know, all the other components of the National School Lunch Program have mm-hmm. to be met.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I've seen on your website, I've seen that you do dumplings, you do ramen. I mean, you get very creative with these different stations.
We have stations that go everywhere. We have over 30 different concept stations
now.
Okay. From everything from a Shanghai noodle bar, which is all different kinds of ramen and then delicious proteins that go on with this, to Shaky Joe's, which is our smoothie concept, which we can run for breakfast, lunch, and as an a la carte standalone as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
The meal programs, right down to the Elbow Room, which is our macaroni and cheese concept.
Oh, that's an adorable name.
It's just a great, fun concept. It's macaroni and cheese. I mean, it doesn't get more simple or more classic, but we have all the 30 different toppings you can add to your macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, so note the names. Anyone can come up with jazzy names. That you don't have to be Whitson's to do that, and it really matters. I mean, that's basic Smarter Lunchrooms movement thinking to jazz
that's
things up.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got these catchy names and every station looking really good in themed packaging. And, you know, you make it look easy because that's how the setting is relaxed. But, of course, this is far far from easy. Pick one of your stations and take us behind the scenes about, you know, what makes it tick. You know, the training and everything that you need to do to make it work.
Sure. I'll go with the most complicated, which is going to seem to everybody else to be the most simple, which is the Great American Deli.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that's so complex is because not only because the variety is so great, we try to make that concept really be one of our front runners because it's our biggest competition. Should a student chose to go outside in a campus environment where that's acceptable,
mm-hmm.
but because of the National School Lunch Program guidelines and because of the way proteins that have to be offered every day, the meat alternatives have to be offered and credited, every single meat that we serve comes from different suppliers for different reasons. You know,
mm-hmm.
we go to a specific supplier for turkey because they have the best turkey when you roast it off, and that's when turkey tastes great, not just opening up a package of a deli turkey, but actually seasoning it and roasting it off, taking the water out of that. Everything credits differently, and that's very, very complex. So every training module has to include all the different variations. So if a student is getting that with cheese or without cheese, are they getting this brand of turkey or that brand of turkey? Everything credits different, so it becomes a very complex style of service preparation and training as well to ensure that every student is getting the correct amount with every portion that's served.
And I understand. I mean, so yeah, it's complicated. And I kind of am surprised you brought up the deli, but what you say makes a lot of sense because there's also sodium in processed meats, and that has to be part of the
100%.
Yeah, yeah. So you use videos as well as printed materials to train staff, right?
We do. Mm-hmm. So every concept starts out, obviously, after the conceptual. It starts out by building with our chefs and our marketing department. We build what's called a concept book. So every single concept has a traditional book, a binder, so it's in print. We know that people learn differently. Some people like visuals, some people like reading, some people like a combination. Then once the set is done and we have staged everything, we do a complete video that shows the station in operation from mm-hmm. the back to the front.
Yeah, yeah. And there has to be some cross-training so that you can move somebody from pizza to deli to ramen should you have people not coming in on a given day or that kind of thing. So
I think that's the most
commitment.
Important part of that
yeah.
is training people on the equipment and then having them cross-train in different stations because every station that we have is not a permanent installation. We
yeah.
have stations that we've brought in. For example, we have one called Fiesta Fresco. Very interesting. It was sort of a Spanish-Latin concept, and we introduced that in an environment where we thought that would be a huge hit. And it lasted about a year and then just started to phase out. And
mm-hmm.
it didn't really make sense to continue giving up real estate for that particular concept anymore. So now I have 4 people that have worked there a year, fully trained on that equipment and that concept. But now I'm dissipating you. You're going to now work in La Cucina. You're
yeah.
going to work in Great American. So I didn't want them going in cold in situations like that. And
mm-hmm.
again, yes, you have absenteeism. You have people retire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a big commitment. So I feel like some people listening today might be feeling pretty overwhelmed by all of this, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's
it can
just
seem
say,
intimidating. It
yeah,
can.
Yeah. So say you're a self-op that's just way too small for this kind of model, or maybe you are big enough, but you've just heard what Paul has to say, and you're worried your administration and school board will never share your vision, or you know, not without you leading them a lot. So, like, what can you do to start generating the kind of food court type buzz that we're talking about?
So I think anybody can have a food court environment, even if you don't have all the wish list equipment that you'd love to have, and lead into that. What I suggest is taking a section on your serving line, something that has equipment that can be used a little versatile, or at least that you can put maybe a hot plate on top of something so that you can change the look and feel of it. And start with something simple like pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Start and focus on the freshest ingredients, the best recipe you can come up with to make a nice fresh dough, all different toppings, and really focus on the display. And I think that's where we started, honestly. And the best resources that are out there are free.
Mm-hmm.
Go shopping. My two favorite things, go shopping and watch TV. Right now, we have a wealth of information on TV. Any one of those guest chefs and celebrity chefs are going to show you what's hot right now. They're not making stuff that's old. They're not making stuff that's not going to be interesting or trendy.
Right,
it's what's hot. Pull from that. Grab from that. and focus on building a brand around something new or interesting and shop, because the retail stores that exist right now all across this country, even in the smallest towns and the smallest suburbs, can have a gourmet flair with a presentation style that you can take away from, you know, almost always.
Right.
I mean, you travel, go to a city, go to a town, find a gourmet store, look them up online, go in, take pictures, talk to the owner.
Yeah, yeah. And just try to do it. And you had some just really neat low overhead ideas. Say, for instance, you've got, you know, a number of so-called branded concepts, but your kids are coming through a standard line. You talked to me about just changing the design of the serving ware for each so-called brand, which is like, oh, that was like an aha moment for me. You're not spending more money. You're just making design decisions for each kind of semi-station on the line, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cost any more money. It's like Ford has 12 different models. They all look totally different, mm-hmm. right? But it's the same banner. So the same thing here. If you're going to make a Coyote Grill, for example, get vessels that look completely different from the vessels that you're using for the La Cucina.
Mm-hmm.
So for La Cucina, you might have, you know, stainless steel, classic, full wrap type pans. And for the Coyote Grill, you want to get, you know, vibrant colors and give it an identity and make it so that the students immediately identify what this is different.
Right.
This is, I know orange is Coyote Grill.
Yeah.
Orange and red and yellow, you know, that's all Coyote Grill.
Well, and then you talked to me about actually getting different color uniforms for your server. So you have an orange shirt for the Coyote Grill server.
Yep.
Right?
Again, another very inexpensive way. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think that a blue shirt costs any more than a red shirt or an orange shirt.
Exactly.
So, you know, talk to your supplier and say, you know, this is a color I'm identifying with. This is a color. And pick colors that you can match to your service ware, to your Crocs, to your, you know, dishes that sit inside your steam wells.
Yeah, yeah. So no extra money, just some creativity. And then that's the lowest cost, you know, the lowest overhead innovation you mentioned to me. I just love this. So to say you're a small district, no extra money to spend, and you want to do waffle bars, and you've got one waffle iron. You said share it among sites and do waffle bar day in a different school every day.
That's right. You can move the waffle bars, panini grills, two of my favorite things because they're portable, but they have such an impact, and the opportunity for variety is unbelievable. Waffle bar can be a breakfast. It can be a lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could have granola in it. It can have raisins in it. It could have toppings. And, again, you do it one day at the high school, the next day at the middle school, even bring it down to the elementaries and build a little food court feel right around it.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, you know, set the entire station up with your toppings and give your waffle bar a name. You know, Wally's Waffle. Give it a name. Give it an identity so that somebody can associate with it.
It's great, Kelly. I mean, as I said earlier, is the food court state of mind, which is achievable to some degree anywhere. So
anywhere.
I want that to be a takeaway for everyone who's listening today. So folks, you can hear, see a great deal of what you've been hearing Kelly talk about on YouTube. Whitson's has posted a video called Fooditude for March. And there's lots of handsome, creative point of sale promotions there that you could easily emulate. So there's a link to that on today's show page on InsideSchoolFood.com. Kelly, friend, it's been great chatting with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Inside School Food is a production of the Heritage Radio Network and can also be found on heritageradionetwork.org and iTunes and Stitcher, where you can subscribe and never miss an episode. And remember, for near daily school food news that you can use, follow us on Facebook or Twitter. In the engineering booth today, Heritage Radio executive producer Jack Inslee and studio intern Malcolm Fisher. I'm Laura Stanley, and I look forward to welcoming you back with a new episode in 2 weeks, May 18th. We're going to be talking about breakfast.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.